Glad to see everyone out this evening. Desire y'all's prayer. Have a little topic that actually was brought on by thinking about Christ's last days and especially his last day. And the word that is the basis for my thought this evening is civility. So what does civility mean? Have you ever really pondered that word? I mean, we probably have a general idea of what civility means. But it actually dates back to about the mid-16th century. And it started off referring to the quality of one who had been schooled in humanities. And so in academic settings, you would have debates. I don't know if any of y'all have ever participated in a debate team in high school. Back when I was in high school, they had a debate team and I was put on it. And it's an interesting experience because you're given a topic and you're given whether you're the, what they refer to as the affirmative side or the negative side. And in the contest we went to, you didn't know your topic ahead of time. You were given it and you were given 15 minutes to prepare for this debate. And so you had 15 minutes to come up with what you were going to do. And then basically you would present, if you were the affirmative, you got to go first. You would present your thoughts to the affirmative of the topic and you had 3 minutes. And then once you were done and you had to stop at the 3 minutes, they cut you off. And when you were done, the next person had 2 minutes to ask you questions. And then at the end of 2 minutes, they had 3 minutes to present their negative argument. And then you had 2 minutes to talk to them. And then there was a break. And then each team had 1 minute to summarize their point of view. Now, in this case, there was a judge that would be actually listening to the arguments back and forth. And the judge would be determining how well did you present your ideas, how many facts did you use, was it actual data you used, or was it made up stuff? Because there were rules around how you had to do it. But a lot of it also dealt with courtesy. Courtesy for when you were interacting with the other team. When you were questioning the other team, if you were the one to question them, you couldn't make statements. You couldn't ask hypothetical questions. You had to ask a question about what they talked about. So you couldn't take your turn to speak and just randomly do what you wanted. The reason why I mention that is because when the word finally entered ordinary usage, it is accepted to mean that it's speech or behavior that is polite, courteous, gentle, and measured. In our world today, if you think about the speech in society, the speech just it seems like within groups, I'm thinking even at work sometimes, civility, where you're actually trying to be gentle, measured, where you're trying to work with people and trying to communicate with them, do we lose focus on civility and we get to trying to prove our point? We want to hammer it down. In fact, in a lot of our public debates today, people will use civility. They will actually use the word. And I was reading a person who analyzed a speech, and he said the person was using the word civility as a club to hit at his opponent. He wasn't even using the word civility correctly, if you will. He was using it to try to imply this person wasn't doing right. Now let's think about Jesus and his last days. So he gets put on trial. False witnesses are brought before him. How did he handle that? How did he respond? What we have is he said not a word. He didn't even respond. He just, okay, If you want to listen to these men spout off, go ahead. Even when he was brought in and was being asked questions directly and was said, yeah, don't you know I have the power to set you free? The only thing he said was, you don't have any power unless my Father's given it to you. But he didn't really get hateful, spiteful, even to the point of being hung on the cross, a sign over his head, King of the Jews. You know, there's those that feel like it was put up to mock him. We also have record that, I think it was Pilate said, I wrote what I wrote for a purpose. But many of those around there, we have record, they made fun of Jesus. They mocked him. If you're the Son of God, save yourself. One of the sinners on the cross supposedly crying out, if you're the Son of God, save me. And what was Jesus' response in all of that? He didn't say anything to those folks. Now, he did talk to one person while he was on the cross. One man who civilly approached our Lord. And he told the other man, stop hollering at Christ, at Jesus. He's not done anything wrong. We're here because we deserve to be here. But this man's done nothing wrong. Why are you hollering at him? Why are you mistreating him? And he looked at Jesus and he said, Lord, remember me. And what was Jesus' response to that? Today you will be with me in paradise. He answered very civilly, gentle, measured. He didn't lash out at anybody. So I'd like to start off looking at some verses on civility, starting off in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 38. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now, doesn't that sound like our world today? You do something to me, and I'm coming after you. Don't cross into my space. Don't take what's rightfully mine. Because if you do, I'm going to get mine back from you. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not away. Now, if we think about these verses, they almost sound like just give in. Don't defend yourself. And at Calvary, isn't that what Christ did? He was taken to court. He was sued, if you will. Charged with trying to cause riots. I think they said sedition. His clothes were taken from him. Did he countersue? Did he argue? Don't take my clothes. I'm going to need those in a bit. You might kill me today, but I'm going to be alive tomorrow. I'm going to need my clothes in 3 days. Y'all can't have them. Jesus didn't put up the fight for what we would view as a right and a privilege. We talk about in our country the right to a fair trial. We talk about that as something that's worth fighting over. Something that you would go to blows with your fellow man in our country to protect. When you get struck, have any of y'all ever been hit really hard? I have. And especially during some of the training in the military. You know, if you get hit really hard, sometimes the last thing that wants to come into your mind is, that hurt. I think I'm going to turn the other cheek so I can take a wallop on that one. What happens to your heart? Especially if you're not expecting it. something flares up, doesn't it? A little anger pops in there. Have you ever considered Christ? All he was trying to do when he came to this planet was save humanity. Just wanted to give everybody peace. We talked about it, I think it was Wednesday. He rode in, triumphant entry, and then he wept. Because he's like, I had a peace for you, but none of you wanted it. Do you think he could have, potentially, if that would have been us, we could have potentially started having feelings of, they're not listening. They deserve what they get. And when you start thinking somebody deserves what they get, does your civility go up or down? Does your measuredness and gentleness and how you deal with them go up and down? Thinking about some of what is talked about here in this second section of verses, you're compelled to go a mile. So back then, I think it was the Assyrians, the post carriers, the people that would be the equivalent of our mail system, they could grab anybody that they needed and force them to carry goods, mail, or whatever for a mile. Now that was the end of what they could make you do. And in the views of a lot of our world, so they had the right to make you go a mile. But at the end of the mile, you had the right to say, I'm done. How did Christ say to respond to that situation? To go a mile and then remind them that you're done? Now I'm talking, this was a legal right back then. You had the legal right to say, I'm done. I'm not going any further. I've carried it a mile. But instead, Jesus said, go another. Why? Civility. How do you think it's going to impact that person's heart that grabbed you just out of the crowd, didn't know nothing about you, forcing you to work? Maybe it's a heavy burden and he needs two people to carry it because he can't carry it by himself. So he tells you to grab one in and another guy to grab another in, and y'all take off and you get to the end of the mile. And the other man says, I'm done. I'm out of here. What do you think the post courier is responsive if you say, look, sir, if you'll find another person, I think I can still carry it another mile. How do you think he starts looking at you? By that little act of civility. Letting go of the right for just a bit, the inconvenience just a bit, and saying, you know what? You need to get this burden down the road. I've carried it a mile. And yes, I could walk away too, but if you can find another person, I'll help you carry it another mile. What if at that point in time there's no one else really around? You've made it out into the country. Don't you think that courier would be happy to pick up at the other end of the burden now and say, well, okay, let's go another mile. At least it gets me a mile further down getting this to where it needs to go. And you got a mile to potentially talk to somebody about the Lord. A mile to share an experience. A mile to talk about why you're okay carrying that burden one more mile. Do you think you'd make more progress with him if you just said, well, okay, I'm not going to carry it another mile, but I'll walk with you and talk about God? Or do you think you'd make more progress if you said, tell you what, you look like you're having trouble finding somebody. I'll carry it another mile with you. Do you mind if we talk while we do it? Talk about that getting slapped on the cheek. Today, somebody slaps somebody on the street and they're probably going to end up getting arrested. You know, it's just the way our assault and battery, I think, is the charge they would bring up there. In fact, actually, a lot of times the person that strikes you is liable to get hit back, and the person that hits them is still going to claim, I had the right to hit them back. It's self-defense. They were trying to hit me. Have you ever heard people say, I swung first in defense? As a boy, I tried that with my dad. He didn't quite let me get away with it. Defense didn't start until you'd actually had an offense to respond to in his world. But if you think about it, somebody hits you, and you angrily turn around and holler, "Why did you do that? I ought to hit you back." How does that person react to that? I can tell you how I would react. You're going to feel defensive. Just because this person's really angry, I hit him. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe I didn't mean to hit you. But I did. And now you look like you're coming at me about to swing. Human nature on my part says what? All right. Let's discuss this. But what does Christ say to do in that situation? Somebody hits you real hard. Turns around, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was in your way. Let me step back." Instead of blowing up, giving way. Even to the point that they hit you twice, giving way. I read a statement once, and it's always stuck with me because I have found it to be true. Do you know it takes two people to fight? It takes two people to fight. You cannot have a fight with just one person. And so if you want to have discord and disagreement, stand your ground. Pick up your side of the fight. Carry it well. You'll have a disagreement. But if you're willing to say, "You know what? I'm not going to pick that fight up. I'm going to let it down. I'm going to back up." You're going to find that while there still may be tension, things start slowing down. In the world, they refer to it as de-escalation. And if you can do it right, do it well, guess what? You can calm the situation down. You can reconcile people together. Do you know that's how peace treaties come about between nations? As people start backing away from my rights, my things, you did this first and I'm going to do that, and they start backing up and saying, "You know what? Let me understand where you're coming from. Why did you hit me that way? Oh, you thought I did this. Oh yeah, if I'd have done that, I can see why you'd be upset. But maybe that's not why I did that. I was trying to do this, and I did it in a way that caused you harm, but it wasn't intentional." Once again, you know, being able to say at the end of the day, "By the way, can I share the gospel with you?" Which person are you more likely to listen to the gospel from? Someone you just went a couple of rounds with the knees and elbows and fists flying? Or somebody that you were able to talk through a situation and calm it down? Talks about going to court. So somebody takes us to court, suing us for as much as they can get. You backed into somebody in the grocery store, put a dent in their car. Next thing you know, they're claiming they've got a hurt neck and their car is totaled, and they just want all they can get. They've sued your insurance company, and now they're coming after you personally, and they just want it all. What does Jesus say to do? Stand up, be belligerent and ugly? No? Totally different way of looking at things, because I look at Christ and I think, you know, his version of civility. Now, let's be honest. There were times Christ did not turn the other cheek. We have record of him making a scourge and running people out of the temple. Was that civil? Was he displaying civility there? You know, the reality of it is, do you know the question? If you think about that story, have you ever thought the question they asked him wasn't that why did you do it? They didn't challenge the rightness of his actions in that. What they asked him was, by whose authority did you do that? So Christ was reacting in a manner that we would seem as just totally wrong. But what he did, even the folks who were concerned about it, they didn't say he had done wrong, that he had acted inappropriately. That was the temple. That was the house of God. And he was defending it so it could be clean, so it could be pure. When I think about Christ up there on the cross, think about all the hatred thrown his way, the vehemence. And yet, up there, he didn't tell them, Lord, you see who put me on this cross. Forgive everybody but that man. You know who drove the nails in my hand. You know who drove the nails through my feet. Forgive everybody but that person. Hold that person accountable. What was it Brother Ed talked about a couple of weeks back in his message? Instead, he said, Father, don't let this stand in the way of their salvation. Don't hold this against them in a way that would prevent them from coming and claiming victory over sin. Yes, they've nailed me to this cross. Yes, they've done terrible things to me, but their souls. And I don't want them to be destroyed. Think of Paul and Silas in prison. We've mentioned those before in messages. The earthquake happens. And instead of running, fleeing, which would, I don't know about you all, but if you feel like you're in jail inappropriately and an earthquake comes along, it would be easy to say, Lord, you're in the earthquake and I'm gone. I'm down the road. Thank you, Lord, for the earthquake. But Paul and Silas had a totally different view on it. They had been sitting there singing praises because they were in prison for Jesus. They weren't cursing the people that had put them in there. They had a whole different kind of civility. They were singing praises because we're considered worthy to suffer for Christ. And then when the earthquake happened, instead of running, they saw the jailer about to kill himself. No, sir, no, no. You've got a soul. Don't do that. Don't harm your soul. And the man got saved. Why did he get saved? Was it because they asserted their rights? Or because they displayed a civility that the world doesn't understand? Because it's not about our rights. It's about the kingdom of heaven and showing to people where they're going. The Apostle Paul, he was accused by the Jews in Jerusalem. And then the Romans, there was such a dispute there that the Romans took him out of the crowd because they were afraid that the two sides were going to attack Paul and hurt him. And so Paul's then, there with the Roman authorities. And he appeals to Caesar. Now, we might think, why did he appeal to Caesar? Isn't that exercising his right? In Acts 23 and verse 11, it says, in the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome. The Lord appeared to him the night that he was taken up from the Jews, from the tussle there. The Lord appeared to him and showed him, yes, you have some rights, and I want you to exercise them. Not because it's going to set you free, though. If Paul had not exercised his rights from what we have of the writings, he would have been a free man. He would have been allowed to go. The Romans would have said, we found nothing wrong with him. But instead, Paul said, I'm going to exercise my right. It left the Roman leaders scratching their heads. Okay, well, if you want to appeal to Caesar, you can go to Caesar. I was about to set you free, but it's your choice. Exercise your right. Why did Paul exercise that right then, when it seems an odd place to do it? I'm going to go to Rome and share the gospel as a prisoner. I'm going to go to Rome and I'm going to get to eventually talk to Caesar himself about the gospel story. Now, how did Paul act as a prisoner? He's put on a ship. They start sailing off to Rome. They run into storms. They get shipwrecked. Was Paul a prisoner that fought and tried to get away every time they turned around? If you read the story of the journey, no. When they would land at a port, if there were Christians there, he would ask the centurion, "Can I visit with the folks?" Civil. Not claiming any rights. Kind. Courteous. And the centurion would be like, "Okay, yes, I'll let you visit with those." Now, when they were in the shipwreck, there was a time where they started to consider once again killing the prisoners. And Paul talked him out of it. How was he able to talk the soldiers out of killing the prisoners? Because if a prisoner escaped in the Roman army, that was a death sentence. Do you know why he was able to convince them of that? He had established a relationship through civility that he had showed them he could be trusted. He wasn't speaking to just set up and run at the first chance. When he got to Rome, it says he was allowed to live in a house pretty much by himself with a soldier to watch him. Do you think the other prisoners that got to Rome had that privilege? It doesn't sound like it. And that privilege allowed him to interface with the Jews in Rome and to share with them the news of the gospel before the Pharisees and those in power had a chance to send their story over. So he was able to openly discuss the gospel of Christ with the Jews in Rome because he had been civil. I'd like to turn to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 31 and 32. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. The world has a civility that they would like for us to pick up. And it's a civility that's around stand your ground. Exercise your right. Don't let people take it from you. We don't find that in the gospel of Christ. What we find is, don't do anything to harm a soul. Don't do anything to discourage someone from potentially coming to Christ. Treat men nice. Even in circumstances where you would be considered okay to not treat them nice. Be nice anyway. Speak kindly to them. Ask about their welfare. It's a challenge to me, especially in the light of what I feel like is just the common themes throughout the world. Civility. But from the point of view of Christ. And if we think about the civility he showed going into Jerusalem, dealing with the Pharisees and the Sadducees the last few days, coming back in, being taken in the garden, beaten, mocked, scourged, given a false trial, and his whole focus was still, I want to save a soul. To the point that hanging on the cross, he did just that. His whole focus was saving souls. And it struck me, there he is on the cross, pretty much not responding to anybody throwing accusations at them or anything all day long. But the one man reached out, "Lord, remember me." And Christ said, "I will. I see your heart. And today you'll be with me in paradise." I challenge us all. Let's walk according to the civility of Christ. Y'all pray for me.